Hello, and welcome to episode one of the Bandwagon Podcast for the week of March 4th, 2024. On this edition of the program, news and notes from the band world, including a new band podcast launches, what that means for the fate of humanity. Some guy who thinks he wants to become a podcast creator makes his case. The band-related internet rabbit hole of the week. And sadly, right out of the gate, an obituary from the wind band world. I'm your host, Rob Hamerton. Hello, dear listener of this podcast, and trust me, this earlier than this program's life, you individually, are very important. First things first, at the beginning of every rehearsal I lead, I find it useful to offer a preview of what's going to happen, because structure. So here, similarly, I shall offer up an idea of how this program will be organized. It's quite simply, like a march. American marches have a very predictable format. If you're in the target audience of this podcast, or even if you're not, you probably have a sense about what that format is, with terminology or not. Marches start with the melody, the A section, which is sometimes called the first strain. And then a secondary melody, the B section, sometimes called the second strain. Bet you saw that coming. Then the march changes key as it moves into its third melody, which we refer to as the trio. It's the melody we probably remember best. Told you. After that comes a short segment, which at some point got nicknamed the dogfight. It's short and punchy and often sounds like musical panic. After that, the march returns to the trio melody, then sometimes wraps up with a coda, which is of course Italian for the big finish. It isn't. It's really the Italian word for tail, but that tends to be the end of the animal, so okay. This podcast won't feature repeat sections like marches do. We won't do the A and B sections twice, or do an additional trio and dogfight in trio. Although you can go back and listen to those bits all over again if you like. You run your podcast player, you get to decide. But otherwise, what better format for a podcast about bands, whether marching or seated, than a march? So, detail to the ready. Let's hit the first strain. In this episode's first strain, there's a new podcast in town. And it's not the first podcast about band to appear in the podcast universe, so what sets this one apart? Well, yeah, there are podcasts out there about wind bands. I checked. And what I found was that the great majority of them focus on music education. They're pitched at teachers. Not that this is a bad thing. I was a teacher once, and yes, resources are good. But what I didn't find were podcasts that were aimed at an audience which, forgive me, is logically a whole lot larger than band directors. And that audience is band members, past or present. These are people whose activity in band was musical, yes, but if you ask us why we ever joined band, we may give answers like, the life I love is making music with my friends. True, very few people join their school band because we instinctively love the winds and percussion art form. Many of us initially took up an instrument or joined a band because our friends were going to, or our family members already had, or our parents wanted us to, or we saw that spring Six Flags or Disney trip scheduled for the spring and said, yes, please. But that's okay. Because those of us who stuck with it beyond whatever was our original reason, we have it for life. My point is, band can be as much a social activity as a musical one. For a lot of former high school and college students, homecoming is for going back to your old school and seeing if the buildings are still standing. Very often for former bandos, it's a little more than that. Also, out in the big world where not everybody gets band, it can be a tougher environment in which to outwardly revel in our band geekness. I've been a Star Trek fan since I was about 8 years old, and it's not that different. Trekkies or bandos, and in my case, both, we partake of an admittedly curious art form, with its own understandings and terminology that sometimes don't make it into the broader mainstream culture, and are certainly looked at by the unbanded as, well, weird. This one time, at band camp, means something very different to us than it does to fans of that particular silly movie. And we get a little put out by their seeming belittling of our activity, even as we're reflexively resigned to it. For most people, 8 to 5 is a work day. For marching people, it's a step size. A lot of people out there in the big world don't know the difference between an oboe and a clarinet, or a tuba and a sousaphone. In here, there are people who can tell the difference between an E-flat clarinet and a B-flat clarinet. In the dark. But when band folks get together, the inside jokes start to fly, the old stories get told and retold, and frankly, we relax and enjoy being bandos. It's not unlike being at a Star Trek convention. Nobody thinks they're weird, because the standards in here are different. Admittedly, that all sounded a little insular, maybe a little paranoid. In some sense, we band types have I Want to Believe posters on our walls, but it's not inaccurate. This weekly audio get-together won't ignore the music education side of things, because quite often, it'll probably be a window into the behind-the-scenes part of band for folks who are merely playing members. I put the word merely in some pretty serious quotation marks here. But one important goal for this program will be to build community through band, to be a resource and a refuge for band geeks. Now, I say a resource because I'm looking forward to having conversations with people who know about topics inside the band activity that either you wondered about or you never really thought about before, but which are part of the band thing. Things like band conducting and directing, and those can be two different things. Band arranging and composition, community bands, military bands, band alumni organizations, wind band history, service groups like Kappa Kappa Psi and Tau Beta Sigma, marching percussion, the experience of young music educators, band director burnout, because that's a thing, peer leadership, writing about band, yeah, that's out there, and we can talk about it. Oh, and do not forget, color guard, doing it, teaching it, designing it. And when I get to those people, I'm going to ask them the question, guard people don't get flip folders. How do they learn all that stuff? Educate me. Let's see, what else? Well, pipe bands and mummers bands, they're bands, they count. And while we're on that subject, there have been yelling matches for a long time now about how drum corps isn't band and don't ever call it band because it's different for this and this and this and this reason. Yeah, we'll probably talk about it now and again. And I'm looking forward to having conversations with friends and colleagues of mine which will be unique and will probably defy category. Now, that list of possible topics to cover does include quite a few things that fall under the music education umbrella. About that, we teacher types do a lot of pushback against the approaches to education that emphasize preparing students to enter the 21st century workforce and be good little worker drones. We much prefer to talk about art for its own sake. Why do we teach and do music? Because music itself is important. But yes, in the process of teaching people how to make music, there are other extra musical benefits that arise. Collaborative learning, self-expression, teamwork, neurological development, craftsmanship, time management, spatial intelligence, all those good buzzwords. And they're not unimportant. But when we go back to our alma mater for homecoming weekend and see our former bandmates, do we talk about all the extra musical skills we learned? We probably do not. Do we talk about how we listened to music differently than we did before we were in band? Probably not that either. We do, however, tell stories about the back of the bus or the back of the clarinet section. We reminisce about all the ridiculous and glorious memories. So, a resource and a refuge. For all of us who inhabit this particular corner of the world, who share this particular curious interest, as a friend of mine once said to me, we're in band, we're all odd ducks. So, let's flock. With that, we'll take a quick water break and meet you on the other side. Do keep listening, I implore you. Okay, let's pick it up at the second strain. In this week's second strain, who is this Rob person anyway? So if you don't know me already, well, frankly, that's great, since I suspected that the only people listening to this first episode might be friends of mine. If my name doesn't ring a bell, but instead you found this band podcast because you were looking for a podcast about band, hoorah! But you'd be justified in wondering, who is he and why does he think he's qualified to run a band podcast? Well, right, I know just enough about band to know that I don't know nearly as much about it as I would like to. There's a reason why I tossed out that laundry list of possible future topics during the first strain, beyond hoping to entice you to stick around for our in-depth conversations about different kinds of drumsticks. To be clear, I've spent the majority of my life, and certainly my entire adult life, in band. I've played in bands since the fourth grade. I've arranged music for bands at just about every level. I taught music in the public schools for a decade and a half. And I get to conduct a community concert band that lives near me. And yet, again, I still feel like I don't know as much about some parts of the activity as I want to know. I've spent more than two decades on the staff of the George Parks Drum Major Academy, and it's only in the last several of those summers that I haven't felt like I was still something of a rookie staff member. And every summer I go back, I work with other instructors who are younger than I and who are the kind of teachers I want to be when I grow up. So, this podcast is my opportunity to pick the brains of band people. Some of them I know, and some of them I don't, but I'm really looking forward to meeting them. But they're all going to be band people who know a lot more about certain subtopics than I do, so that we, together, can get better informed about this activity we love so much. That makes sense, I hope? I hope. All right, let's grab another short break, get hydrated. And starting in the episode that follows this one, after every second strain, I'll have a conversation with someone from or adjacent to the band activity that you will hopefully find interesting and fun. But in this first episode, I'm calling an audible, and not for the happiest of reasons. I hope you'll appreciate why I'm doing it. Be right back. Okay, let's change keys and get into the trio section. In our trio section, usually, again, to the extent that this podcast has been around for very long at all, it's where I'll look forward to great conversations happening. I'll talk with special guests about their areas of expertise, as well as their band experience. This week, though, I want to give this space over to a gentleman whom I was very much looking forward to inviting onto the program for that very reason. Sadly, this will be the obituary that I spoke of in this episode's introduction. On January 16th, Glenn Adsit, director of bands at the Hart School of Music, passed away at the age of 59. Adsit joined the Hart faculty in the year 2000. He conducted the wind ensemble and he taught graduate-level instrumental conducting. In 2014, he was awarded the University of Hartford's Larson Award for Outstanding Teaching. The next year, Music for All included him in their list of the top 40 educators making a difference. His resume was vast. It included numerous Hart School ensemble performances worldwide, as well as album recordings and premieres of original band works. Fanfare magazine described Adsit as one of the finest conductors leading a wind ensemble today. At the time of his death, he was serving as president of the College Band Directors National Association, and he was a frequent guest band conductor, adjudicator, and clinician. And that's how I was fortunate to cross paths with him. Last summer at the New England Band Directors Institute at Keene State College in New Hampshire, Adsit conducted a reading session of works by the composer Michael Markowski and led an instrumental conducting workshop session, and I attended both. They were stellar. I was one of about a half dozen of the attendees who volunteered to be conducting guinea pigs and to be critiqued and coached by Adsit and his longtime teaching colleague, Edward Cumming. After they were done with me, I slunk back to my seat with more than a few things to think about as regards my conducting chops. Which sounds like they were mean to me, and nothing could be further from the truth. Adsit was exacting and detail-oriented and tough, but simultaneously he was nothing but positive and encouraging. After the session was officially over, I stood in line to chat with him briefly, and I wish I could remember exactly what I had to say to him and how he responded. It's kind of a blur. But I do recall thinking, here's an example of a towering figure in the band world who is nonetheless entirely approachable. I was hoping that perhaps the New England Band Directors Institute folks would invite him back next summer. Sadly, I won't get the opportunity to be a student of his again. But happily, I did get that opportunity once. We'll be right back. Here comes the dogfight. The dogfight section consists quite simply of my band-related internet rabbit hole of the week. Well, this week it does, anyway. This is where I talk about the end result of an online excursion that might be of some interest to you. You may wish to run a similar YouTube search and completely destroy an evening watching and listening to some of this yourself. This week's rabbit hole of the week isn't a new one for me, but by the time this podcast has been up and running for a bit, I'm sure I'll have carried out newer ones, even while I should have been tending to my church gig or doing some admin for this podcast, but you don't need to know about that. Instead, may I recommend to you the Bands of His Majesty's Royal Marines. What's the best way to describe this organization? It's probably the United Kingdom's rough equivalent of the various U.S. Marine Corps bands, except rather than a number of regional marine bands around the country with the president's own, based out of Washington, D.C., at the head of the organization, instead it seems to be several regional bands, not nearly as many, which on occasion all come together to form the massed bands of the Royal Marines. The most famous of those massed performances is the annual Mountbatten Festival of Music concert held at the Royal Albert Hall in London. The Mountbatten Festival has been going on for more than 50 years now. It's a benefit concert for various charities that support UK military veterans. The concert features the massed bands performing repertoire of wildly divergent genres, from staid-old military band traditions all the way through some frankly fluffy pop tunes. I'm struck by their pop medleys in particular. They've done medleys of the music of Barry Manilow, Tom Jones, Queen, to name a few. Now, there are some world-class musicians sitting on that Royal Albert Hall stage, and they apply themselves equally to the music of Edward Elgar or Elton John. The thing that interests and amuses me is their willingness to play the fluffy stuff, to really commit to the bit. Consider this, and when you look at some of the video, you'll see what I'm talking about. Let's just say that the concert dress uniform for His Majesty's Royal Marines bands is exactly as English monarchy-looking as you'd expect. The word ornate only begins to cover it. The uniforms would easily double as costumes for a Gilbert and Sullivan operetta. And yet, dressed in all the finery that the British Empire's legacy has bequeathed to them, they still seem very comfortable. No, I take that back. They seem actively enthusiastic about covering Tom Jones' hit It's Not Unusual or Elton John's Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting. In fact, I think that one is the best entry point into the masked bands. If you do a YouTube search and type in Royal Marines Band Elton John Medley, it'll take you right there. I put a link in the show notes. Not only do they cheerfully play all this pop stuff, they seem to revel in the opportunity to put their instruments down and clap and invite the audience to clap along too. If they aren't actually cheerful about it, they put on a darn convincing show. And watching and listening to that, I found myself thinking about the contrast between their organization and our U.S. Marines' President's Own. The U.S. Marine Band stationed in D.C., which is a future internet rabbit hole, I promise, tends to play repertoire that's very much rooted in traditional and contemporary wind ensemble literature, along with standard marches and patriotic selections. Also, their standard uniforms are, shall we say, not as ornate as the Royal Marines. Now, the stereotypical American approach to things compared to the stereotypical British approach to things, they're quite different in the eyes of most of the world. America, freewheeling, jazzy, not terribly inhibited. England, stiff upper lip, pomp and circumstance, buttoned down to within an inch of its life. And I'm the son of an Englishman. I know whereof I speak on this one. And yet I think it's safe to suggest that the President's Own is unlikely to break into a medley of Elton John's greatest hits. The Royal Marines, on the other hand, routinely launch into that kind of thing with the energy and general effect of a couple of college marching bands I know. I don't know, just an observation. But if you have a moment, you may wish to search for the masked bands of His Majesty's Royal Marines and see what you think. See if you think I'm crazy or if I'm onto something. Heck, if you're associated with either of those two organizations and you're listening, cool. And I would really love to know what you think about all that. Okay, so we'll pause one more time to catch our breath and then wrap things up for this week. Thanks for listening this far. To wrap up this week, let's take the coda. My coda this week is short and sweet. Like the pilot episode of any TV show, Bandwagon is still finding its way. There's a very good reason why this podcast launches today, March 4th. In spite of that little play on words, this podcast isn't going to limit itself to the marching arts. We'll head indoors as well to talk concert band and wind ensemble, community bands, brass bands, anything involving winds and percussion, mobile or stationary. We want to make sure everybody's included. I know I'm excited to talk to more wise people about their areas of expertise and to talk to you. Yeah, you, dear listener, you. About your band experience. Again, what's a band but a community of like-minded friends? Let's see if we can build something here. That's Bandwagon for this week. If you're hearing this part, that means you stuck with us to the end of the gig. Thank you. That means a lot. Bandwagon was written, researched, and produced by your humble host. Musical interludes were produced by Hammerton Media, from source material largely by John Philip Sousa. You can listen to more episodes at our website, heyband.podbean.com. Please give me feedback, be polite, but let me know what you like or what you think might change. Tell me your best band story. Suggest a topic for a future episode, whatever you like. You can do that using our email address, heybandwagon@yahoo.com. Or you can leave us a 90-second voice message on the web by going to speakpipe.com/heybandwagon. Be aware that we do reserve the right to include your message on the podcast unless you say otherwise. All those contact links, as well as links to our news items, conversation topics, and interview guests, can be found in our show notes. Please share the show on social media, and thank you for that. If you enjoy this podcast, get someone else to listen as well. As it turns out, word of mouth is the best recruiting tool. And to keep up with us every week, subscribe to Bandwagon on the Podbean app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please give us a 5-star review. It really does help other people to find the show. For now, take care, stay in touch, stay in tune, and we'll do this all again next week. I'm Rob Amerton. Detail, Fallout,